Welcome to the Bring Your Lunch Pail Sports Podcast.
Let's go there!
Presented by Luke's Pizzas.
Remember, football is crazy, love is blind. Good luck, football, what a story.
Featuring Lucas Clark and Nigel Romain.
I'm talking about sports, and I'm coming.
Now introducing your host, Tanner Retz.
Let's go, episode 41 of the Bring Your Lunch Pail Sports Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Luke's Pizza.
It is.
Get your pizza by Luke. All right, we're jumping right into it. There are critical times up ahead for the volleyball team that Luke and Nigel are part of. What's the team name again?
Hit it from the back.
Hit it from
row.
The back.
Row. This is pause.
Yeah. Emphasis on the pause.
There's a lot of tough times. A lot of critical decisions need to be made. Luke, as the GM of your team with the recent fall, you currently don't have Maddie on your roster because of vacation. You're losing another teammate, two teammates to a move, and you're battling with injuries as well with another one of your players. How are you going to handle rebuilding this roster of what was once a dynasty is now falling apart, kind of like the Patriots in a sense?
Yeah, I guess to carry that analogy along, like, we got Tom Brady sitting over here and Nigel.
The GOAT.
Yeah.
Wow, high praise.
Yeah.
I think that's the nicest thing Luke's ever said about me. That's,
right? That's, our fearless leader, you know. So as long as you have him on the team, I fancy myself a Danny Amendola type. Maybe a Julian Edelman if I'm feeling kind to myself.
Wow.
Maybe a Gronk on some days, although Maddie's probably more of the Gronk figure on the team. But as long as you have the core components, you know, I think you could still put out a championship winning team. But yeah, our team's getting hit pretty hard. We got to go back and find some new teammates. It's sounding like we got some people moving away, so our roster's looking a little thin. But at the end of the day, we just need some bodies. Specifically, we need female bodies because the league requires that we have at least two girls on the court at all times, or we have to forfeit.
Yeah. Number one thing I'm going to say is that I'm considering putting all of us down as non-binary. That might be able to bypass some of the
issues. Yeah, I don't think that's going to go over well.
Yeah, I agree. It probably won't go over well. So open tryouts for any women out there that are...
I don't think we have a lot of female listeners, but if you are out there and you like to play volleyball and ideally you're good at it, you're more than welcome to throw your hat in the ring. You just have to be available from anywhere from 6 to 11 o'clock at night on Tuesdays and be in Capitol Hill. I don't think that's asking a lot.
It really isn't. Also, you can check us out on Tinder, Bumble, Hinge.
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. Yeah, any of those.
MySpace.
Yeah, we're creating dating profiles for our volleyball teams that we can try to find a match. So... keep your eyes peeled and swipe right, please.
Related, a question I'd ask to the room and to any of our listeners out there is that how do you politely approach females in the wild and ask them if they want to join your volleyball team in earnest? I don't know. Can you walk up to girls at Green Lake, walking around the lake and be like,
you look
tall.
Like you can smack some balls.
Yeah, you're tall. You look like you play volleyball.
Yeah, I think that's it right there.
It might be worth trying.
Yeah, I don't know. Desperate times.
That's how we got Sarah, more or less. So,
that's true. She was already in the league, though.
Yeah.
But
Nigel, this was a question I asked Luke. So for Underdog, you can sign up as an individual. Do you have access to be able to see individuals that are looking for a team?
No, we do not have access to that. I know that we could. I think that we could probably ask the league to pass as an individual player. I'd rather find one on our own, though, just because you never know what you're going to get on that one. But I know there's a couple, our alternate that we had before that just moved to Hawaii. She's from like some Facebook group and that's how we found her. And so I think we're going to go hit that up again and see if we can find someone else that plays through that Facebook group. But yeah, it's gonna be weird, gonna be tough times rebuilding the dynasty
end of an era
from the ground floor.
And speaking of dynasties, how's the boys of Ballard looking there? Week two of winter workouts for the Ballard Beavers. How's your team looking there, Coach Nigel? Coach Hamsteak.
Yeah, Coach Hamsteak. The Coach Hamsteak really hasn't caught on yet with the kids, but we're still working that. We got plenty of time. Team's looking good. The only problem I think is going to be that all the talented freshmen aren't going to be on our squad. There's going to be they're going to be up on JV or varsity, all the studs. But some of those kids look pretty good. Some of them swing the stick pretty good. Got a couple good pitchers in there. Catchers, I think, have some work to do, but me and Tan will whip them into shape for sure. So I'm curious to see where everybody falls by the end of this, and see what we're going to be working with. It's looking promising though. A lot of young talent coming through Ballard right now.
Nige, as a new coach, you know, a lot of coaches when they come in for a coaching interview, they got to have a coaching philosophy. What is your philosophy that you bring to the team? What are some of your cardinal rules that you have for a team that you're leading?
That's a great question, Tanner. Complete chaos is what I'm looking for in my team. Just wild. I need a team full of guys who can hit oppo, for one. I know that's important to you.
Don't say that.
And a bunch of good bunters. That's what I'm looking for mostly. No, I think...
you have any prospects out of the Japanese league coming your way? Because it sounds like that's what you're looking for.
That's exactly what we've got.
Slap oppo hitter and bunting specialist.
Yeah, running through the batter's box, slapping balls down. No, I think the biggest thing with this age group and C team volleyball is just getting people up to that next level and being prepared.
C team volleyball?
Sorry, C team baseball. I don't know what I said. We're talking about
Are
volleyball.
You double dipping?
Yeah, I'm double dipping. I'm coaching volleyball at the same time. No, I think it's just you're going to end up with the kids that aren't as talented most likely. So it's coaching them up and getting them up to a point that they're...
Or just younger too.
Yeah, or just younger, yeah.
These bigger schools, I mean, there's 60 kids, 70 kids that are coming out to try out.
Yeah, and there's a ton of youngsters. Like, I mean, it's kind of overwhelming because even with all the coaches that are there, there's so many kids like running around all over the place in the small area. It's like get kind of hard to wrap your head around. And I think I know like 3 kids' names so far, actually. So, but yeah, I think it's just getting them up to speed and, be kind, be patient.
I'm ready to run through a brick wall for Coach Hamsteak.
Yeah. I'm still trying to find my coaching voice here. I was talking about that with Tanner yesterday at practice. Like it's kind of weird because I just haven't worked with 14-year-old boys. So it's a little different finding your voice with them and all of them are at that age where I don't think most of them don't really give a crap about what you say. And so kind of trying to find that happy medium to give them advice on something that they're actually going to take and take to heart. Some of the kids are like, you know, coach's pet and or will do anything for what coaches say, but there's definitely a few of them. The very first one I tried to talk to yesterday was kind of brushed me off pretty quick. So trying to figure it out still, getting my feet wet.
Yeah. And it takes time. It takes time. You think you know how to, I don't know, like, you think you know who you are until you jump into that coaching role and you're like, wow, who am I going to be as a coach?
Yeah.
And that was something that I struggled with when I first started coaching was I was trying to be like coaches that I used to have. And I'm like, well, that's not me. And it wasn't genuine. And, you know, even kids of that age, they feed off of that. They know what's real and what's not real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I know I've never been the like rah-rah run you through a brick wall type. I think that's more Tanner than me. Tanner's had me ready to run through a brick wall before, but I think that's not my style. So I think I'm more calculated and analytical in things. So bring my HR approach to things and see how that goes.
All right. Well, speaking of rah-rah and wanting you to run through a brick wall, we're going to jump right into an interview with our commissioner of our fantasy football league. Last week, you heard Clayton, the champion of our league, bash our commissioner and say such foul words. And Shane's going to get his chance for redemption. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Luke from Luke's Pizza here. Are you a dirty, filthy little pizza slut? Me too. Luke's Pizza is now accepting orders. If you'd like to place an order, just text the code word pizza slut to 425-350-2379. Feel free to let me know what toppings you'd like on that pizza. I probably won't put them on there, but it's worth a shot. Because at Luke's Pizza, you know the saying, when you're here, your pizza gets it your way. That's Luke's Pizza promise. All right.
So we got Shane Moore, commissioner of our fantasy football league, on the line. Shane, I did an intro leading up to this that you're not going to obviously hear because we're not live, but I kind of led it for you that your name was just getting thrown into the dirt by our league winner, Clayton Knowles.
Just absolutely drug.
Yeah, absolutely drug through the mud. And this is your chance to redeem yourself. Talk about, you know, we were just talking about how Luke is going to rebuild their volleyball team, and you'll listen to the episode later and hear the details of that, but how are you going to rebuild what was once such a promising team year after year that it just went into shambles? How are you going to rebuild that to possibly find yourself back into a fantasy football championship?
Man, so I'll be totally honest. My beef is not so much with Clayton. Listen, when you're the winner, you get to say what you want. That's just a fact of life, all right? History is written by the winners. So, but what I can do is give you a little bit more detail about how this is not my fault. In that,
okay, I'm excited
to
hear
it. Let's hear it.
You know, just like with fantasy football, there's just a very fine line between success and failure. You guys know that. On the previous episode where we were talking about it prior to the season. What did I say? Something like. It has to do with injuries and being lucky for the most part. And unfortunately, I was set up to fail at both of those. And that's just the way that it is. You know, you're either – sometimes you're Christopher Columbus. Other times you're Steve Irwin 2 years in a row.
Jesus. Getting stung through the heart.
Yeah, you do bring up
death
a good
by stingray.
You do bring up a good point.
He
Shane.
Does.
I forgot that Tanner went to you for the ins and outs of how you win a fantasy football league. when you're doing a sub spot for Nigel, and then you followed up your last place last year with another last place finish. So
I completely followed my own advice and just lost everything. You know. The whole league, probably the whole world, honestly, look at me and they say, "It's all right, Kamish. You got the house, you got a wife, a good job. Your dad didn't die this year." And I got six tours on fucking Black Ops 6 with a 1.8 KD. You'll be okay. I trade it all for a sixth place finish next year. They don't understand what this means to me.
Shane, I think I have some advice for you, and it's that. You got to find bigger chumps like myself or Teo to trade with instead of Clayton. Yeah. I know that propelled you to a fantasy football championship, I'm pretty sure, years ago was back in college when we made a trade that made me like marginally better. Like I went from 12th to 9th, and I think you got the win. So you just got to go after some bigger chumps. Like you can't be dealing with Clayton in these situations.
That's definitely a big part of it, but like I'll maintain that it was a good. I was desperate, so I'll maintain.
I'm gonna stop you right there and say that no trade made in desperation is a good trade. Okay,
I'll maintain that it was a good trade. Kamara at the time was like number 5 in scoring in the league, and Travis Kelce was like on a heater, and so I was just doing whatever it takes. I lost Ken Walker multiple times. Travis Etienne was fucking terrible, so I traded him. Austin Eckler got hurt. God, what else? Anthony Richardson tried to ruin Michael Pittman's career. Deontay Johnson fell off the earth when he got traded. Life was just stacked against me.
Well, one other thing I'd say is that just because Clayton is a bully in reality doesn't mean he needs to be your bully in fantasy too. So, maybe just consider that.
I wish I could say that. I wish I could say that it was a bullying and that I could blame him for that, but everyone knows I'm a dirty trade slut, just like you said. I love trading. It's
at least you're honest about it.
So I don't want to point any fingers at what happened during my draft. But you know, I'm gonna throw around at least one finger here, and you know, I'll have four back. You guys know you got one pointed at somebody, you got three pointed back in you. But I got to point this one a little bit hard. We're on our way to Flatstick, right? My head's completely clear. I'm locked in from a draft day hog crank, and you know who.
He's got the clarity.
I can't.
Powerade in one hand, meat stick in the other.
And you know who shows up 3 hours late from a midnight company picnic?
Who was that?
Nigel Romain.
Okay.
Nigel Iceberg.
Yeah, and then of course you guys had the audacity to be like, yeah, of course we're gonna wait for you. And then when I text and say I'm 7 minutes away, 2 minutes later I get a call. Hey, you're on the clock. Who are you taking?
Yeah, how'd that pick work for you? Yeah,
not good, believe it or not.
That's the pressure of being the commissioner sometimes. Listen. I don't want the
all the free pizza and beers was just too much for you guys to. Yeah,
everyone wanted to get out of there. They had a tight schedule.
Yeah.
Friday night at Flatstick.
Friday night at Flatstick with the boys. Everyone's like, yeah, beers. No, yeah, oh, we got to get out of here quick.
Just the unbearable.
It's 7:02 on the dot.
So basically, all this to say that Clayton winning was, you know, that's probably my bad, but the rest of it, like the back-to-back 12th place finishes, that's anyone's problem, honestly, except for me.
You're just the one who has to live with the consequences.
It's true. Year after year, I just grind tirelessly for this whole league, and then this is how I get repaid in life. Just two 12th place finishes and nothing but endless torment from my own friends.
Did you lead the league in transactions again this year too?
I feel like I always do, so probably.
Okay.
But I mean, it is what it is. Like, I just nothing I can do except, you know, look forward to next season, and hopefully, you know, everyone just forgets that I went back-to-back 12th place and they let me play in the league and not just make me commission it like Clayton was suggesting. And oh, my God.
That should be the punishment. If you get last place, you have to just be the commissioner for the year.
Yeah, just sit out.
Just deal with, wrangling all you guys.
Shane, as commissioner, I got to ask you, with this spicy new bill that's getting pushed across your desk, the potential of having a King of the Rats consolation bracket tournament, how do you feel about that? And what do you think the possibilities of that happening is?
I call it 50-50, unless you basically have two parties in our league, right? You have people that are open to change and can be reasoned with, and then you have everyone who just agrees with what Clayton says. So you just have to get...
So based off of your recent transactions, which camp do you fall into?
Because of my last 2 years of being set up by this league, I think I'm on board with what you guys were saying, because if anyone deserves that rat clawed necklace, it's probably me right now. And at least I could wear something with pride that isn't, you know, like a championship trophy or a ring.
Something cool.
Rat claw necklace cool. And a rat tail hairstyle for the year.
the only problem with the haircut, and I did like making people do stand up with jokes everyone else has written. The problem with making me do that is that it's just going to be funny no matter what. So you guys will have to make it really bad, because you take one look at a guy with a rat tail haircut, especially someone who looks like me, and you're telling those jokes, everyone's just going to laugh anyway.
You know, that's an interesting point, though, going back to the little rat claw necklace. A lot of the guys in the fantasy league wear chains now. So we could, instead of getting a little trophy, it's just a little rat claw like pennant that goes on your chain that you get to wear on your chain for a year.
You add a toe every time you win or lose.
Wow, I love it.
Shane, as commissioner, what are the most challenging aspects to your job?
Oh, the single most difficult part of being commissioner is getting everyone to agree on a date to draft. You would think that mostly figured out lives of 30-plus-year-olds would be pretty easy to pick a day. But I tell you, it make it extremely difficult, and it usually comes down to a singular day every year where everyone is free, which I'm just not buying. I think people just want to have it their way. So wrangling all you cats is probably the single hardest thing. And then any dispute that goes on about league rules, because no matter what happens, every year we go over every single new rule, like every single year, and for whatever reason everyone forgets, or at least there's like select people every year that forget that we agreed on these things, and they get pissed off when it doesn't help them.
So another question for you too, as a commissioner, the example in my head that I have, and I don't know who made this trade, but maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, there was a trade made between two teams where a first round and a second round pick was exchanged for Le'Veon Bell, and that created a big uproar. So when there is a dispute amongst other teams, how do you handle that as the commissioner?
What I do is I look at the facts, and behind the scenes, I take in everyone's input. And then I completely ignore it, and I make a ruling on my own, because this is the only time we ever vote on things is just to make you guys feel better. I get the ultimate decision.
You should be a Supreme Court justice.
It's probably the role I was destined for, but I think
be a
I
cool
think we can
justice
all
ag- less instead of justice more.
I think we can all agree that there's no glory, obviously, in getting 12th place 2 years in a row, but there's even less glory in attempting to tank your team for extra picks next year, and some people were not pleased with that. I don't know. I don't particularly hate being able to trade draft picks, but basically what I was saying is I think tanking your team and tanking your team, especially if you're like kind of down and out, just to get extra draft picks is a really good strategy. But I don't think it's something that should be in our league. Otherwise, that'd be me for the last 2 years. So I'd be racking up all sorts of picks for next year, and then no one would legitimize my win.
Fair. My last question for you, Shane, and this really goes out to all the listeners that are aspiring to be a new and up-and-coming commissioner of maybe their own league. What advice would you give a new commissioner to a fantasy football league?
First and foremost, the biggest advice, everything I'm going to say is like it's probably just negative, so I should probably not say anything, but it's the first and foremost that you should probably do is make sure that the rules are very clear to everyone every year. The payments to everyone and what people get are very clear, because people will forget any new rule changes. You should probably try as much as you can to discuss anything coming up. Oh, hey, Joe. Sorry, Josephine just walked in the room. Discuss with your only most trusted confidants new rule changes coming up, and get their input on that, because there's always voices in the crowd of any league that are going to go against everything that anyone says that sounds like fun. So and then I guess lastly, be prepared to deal with the fact that everybody has lives, and that it's really hard to get together for a live draft that lasts multiple hours. But it is some of the most fun you'll have all year. So that is the bright spot, is that you get to be with the boys and have a good time drafting before you lose everything.
I got one more quick thing. We're running up against a break here, Shane. So
no, you're good. Let me go whenever you need to.
Make it fast. But Clayton basically called you a puppet and said that he's the Dick Cheney of this league. I'd just like a short comment on how you would respond to that. Thank you.
I think short and sweet. I'd probably call that accurate right now. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I was hunting in the woods for salvation, and I got shot by my own friend, my own assistant commissioner.
All right,
Shane Moore, ladies and gentlemen. Shane, I'm sure that you have to get back to the war room. I'm sure your off season has already started. So good luck to you to the 2025 season. I do have actually one more. I said I was going to ask you one more question, but I'm going to ask you another one. Who is your Super Bowl pick for this year in real football?
In real football right now? Well, I got the Ravens and Detroit meeting in the Super Bowl. And gun to the head right now, I want Detroit to win, but I think Baltimore is the more complete team this year. So I'm picking Baltimore.
Love it.
Good pick.
All right, well, that's a good transition for us to kick Shane off the line and jump into NFL. So let's get on that. Thank you, Shane.
You got it. Commissioner S out.
Tell me what they talking about. I ain't fucking listening. Let your thoughts run your mouth. But ain't touching dividends. Nigga, I ain't from the South, but kick it with my Memphis twin. Nigga, I can't take a loss. I'm always going for the win. I've been geeked up in this booth. I got my blunt pack for the starter. Nigga, don't be acting. Know that put some
hope. So, Luke, I think you were the one that was keeping track of all of our NFL playoff picks. So, do you have a tally on that right now, how we're doing?
Yeah, not great. I think based off of our picks I wrote down, we posted on the Instagram the little graphic of our picks. I did make an error on Tanner's because you did have the Ravens. I think I put the Steelers on there. So I think you had 4 of 6 right. I had 2 of 6 right, and Nigel had 1 of 6 right.
Is that good?
So not great. I will say I did say the Ravens were going to win. I thought the Steelers were going to cover. So. That counts for nothing in Vegas, but in terms of picking who would win, I at least was 3 of 6, which is also not very good, but better than 2 of 6. That's math.
Nice. Yeah. So did you guys get a chance to watch the games this weekend?
Some of them.
A little bit, yeah.
Parts of all of them, or I listened to it on the radio.
Any highlights from the weekend that you want to touch on?
I'd probably start with the Bucks and Commanders game is probably where I'd start. I mean,
that was the only real good game, I would say.
Yeah, I was going to say a broad take about it is that I thought it was funny because the NFL just has such a different perception about the league as a whole that, like, we didn't go into the weeds with the college football stuff, but we kind of touched on it that it's like everyone gets pissed because there's not enough SEC teams, blah, 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 and then all of the first round games like turn into blowouts. What happened in the NFL? Almost all the first round games are blowouts. Like, it's kind of what happens in a large format playoff system. Like, it's just the reality of it. There's really only a few good teams, there's only a few great teams. And then there's a bunch of good, better than good teams. And I think that's what you see a lot of the time. Sometimes you get some spicier matchups, but this time of the year, it seems like, despite our picks, is that there's a handful of teams that are a lot better than the other ones, and that's how it kind of played out. So the Commanders and Bucks was a close one.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say that stood out was Derrick Henry out in those playoff games. I mean, I didn't watch the whole thing, but between highlights and what I did see, he just looked absolutely unstoppable and looked fresh. He was, I think Lamar was talking about it after the game that it looked like movie Cars, where Lightning McQueen is just flying by everyone. And that was Derrick Henry that whole game. It was just like huge holes, and he looked like he was faster than every single person on the field, which he probably is, but he looked incredible, which in turn made the Ravens look pretty darn good. Outside of that, I thought the rest of the games, you know, kind of went chalk. I picked a few upset type picks, and none of those panned out. So yeah, I mean, I think everything looked pretty standard for the rest of the playoff weekend.
Do you guys think that Sam Darnold in the Vikings and Rams game, that he just left tens of millions of dollars left on the table now after that performance?
I think so.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe not tens of millions, but I mean, I'd kind of said that when I picked the Rams to win that game, one of the few that I did get right, is that he looked really bad against the Lions, and then he followed that up by looking really bad against the Rams. I don't think the Vikings, and we talked about this, and I had said it, that it's like, why do you have to re-sign him? Why would you? It was like, maybe you franchise tag him if you want an insurance policy, but you took the 10th overall pick on J.J. McCarthy. And kind of projecting there, but it came to fruition, is it's like, didn't look good, doesn't look like a guy who can win a playoff game, not on that team, maybe a different team. Maybe if the team's constructed differently, he could be a guy who could win in the playoffs. But yeah, so I don't think the Vikings are going to re-sign him. I do think he'll get a contract somewhere else, but yeah, maybe drops from a $40 million contract to a 33, 35.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Do you think he stays with the Vikings then?
No, I just said that I don't think.
Oh, okay,
no,
sorry.
I don't think the Vikings. Maybe they'll franchise tag him, but if you're Sam Darnold, maybe if they have a good relationship, be like, please don't franchise me. I'd rather hit the open market right now, especially if I don't play next year because you play JJ over me.
Yeah.
You might get paid for 1 year, but now you're definitely not going to get a three-year, $100 million contract.
It's so funny how quick the national media like narrative changes, because like 3 or 4 weeks ago, they were just rambling on and on about how Sam Darnold is the guy. Like, there's no way they can let him walk. Like, they have to sign him. They have to get him on a long-term deal. Like, they got to find a way to get something out of J.J. McCarthy. And like, this is his team. Like, he has to be running this team. And now, the second he loses this game against the Rams, it's completely changed, where it's like, oh, they got to get rid of this guy. They can't keep that. They got to let the future come in.
And it still might. That still might be the case. I just never really bought that narrative, because much like I said on the last episode, why'd you use a 10th overall pick on J.J. McCarthy if your plan wasn't to use him? Because you thought that he was a guy that can elevate your team. And I think Kevin O'Connell is a good enough play caller and offensive-minded guy that just about anybody can go in there and get your team wins, and they proved that this year. But to get playoff wins, you need to have somebody special. Isn't that why you used a 10th overall pick on a quarterback? Is because you thought he was special? That's just kind of where I was at. So they still might give him a long-term contract, but I wasn't buying that.
Another spicy rumor that I also heard, that, again, it may not be anything, but worth talking about, I think, is Mike Tomlin. They're saying that after this season and after losing in the first round of the playoffs, that he might potentially be on the hot seat. Do you think that there's any truth to that?
I don't think so, personally. I think he's just too well-regarded as a coach. That I just don't – I guess he doesn't have the results. Is he like six straight now, one and done's in the playoffs, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they haven't won a playoff game since 2017.
Yeah. But I just don't know that it's hard to blame him for that when he's having to trot out no quarterback every single year.
Is it though, if I can check back on that, is that he's been the head coach there now for a long time. I know he's not the GM, but you've still been the head coach there now for 15, 16. How long has it even been? They win a Super Bowl in 2008?
Yeah, sounds right.
Which is like his second year there. Right? Something like that. So you've been there for about 16 years. I don't know that you can use the line that it's like, well, it's not his fault, they haven't had a quarterback. You've been there 16 years, and you've been there for about six or seven since Ben Roethlisberger retired. What are you doing? Whose fault is it then? I don't know that you can, much like my Mike McDonald kind of rant last week about blaming it on Grubb, is that like at some point you're the head coach, like, you are in control of everything. If you don't have a good quarterback, I think that says something about you as a coach. You're not able to find a solution there.
Yeah, but that they also don't grow on trees, and so you got like who are you gonna get?
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
You know, like where do you go with that when you don't have have the money, don't have the.
He's a victim of his own success, and they are kind of stuck in purgatory because they win 9 or 10 games every year, so you never have a high draft pick. So it's hard. You took a shot on Kenny Pickett, which was the worst pick ever. I think we both knew that when they when they took him. That it's like, you know, unless you're going to find a quarterback at 22 overall, like that's your best chance. At the same time, I'd say is that you look in their division and there's Lamar Jackson potentially winning his third MVP. He's the last pick of the first round, right?
Yeah. I mean, you do find him now and again. Those guys are out there on occasion, but it's definitely not a perfect science, I guess. And to go out there with, I mean, it seems like pretty much every year they're slated for 9 or 10 wins coming into the season, but you look at the roster on the whole, and I don't know that I would look at that roster and say that's a 9 or 10 win team. It's because Mike Tomlin's there, they're a 9 or 10 win team because he just finds a way.
Right, and I would say the same thing I just said, is that if you're questioning the talent across the board, he's been there for 16 years. So don't you have to take some ownership of that?
Yeah, I guess that's fair, but what's the alternative? Who are you hiring?
I agree.
That's going to make you better off than Mike Tomlin. I think just about every team in the NFL would jump at the opportunity to have Mike Tomlin.
Could I give you a parallel, I guess?
Seahawks.
You have something? Well, they don't need a head coach. I don't think Mike Tomlin's going to...
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying as a similar situation was the Seattle Seahawks with Pete Carroll, and I wonder if over in Pittsburgh if they're almost feeling the same way about their head coach.
I'm sure that's exactly...
I was going to use a different comparison. Andy Reid. He was in Philadelphia for a long time.
Great example.
They went to, what, like 4 straight NFC championship games? Yep. They got to 1 Super Bowl, but the Eagles were perennially a playoff team, and usually they won playoff games.
Yeah.
But eventually it was just like, we got to get rid of Andy Reid. We're not...
You also had Donovan McNabb during that time. You had a star quarterback.
Right, but he had Ben Roethlisberger, and like that's... I get now that the last few years, but prior to that, yeah, they had Ben Roethlisberger, and they won playoff game. They went to the playoffs, and they won.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually it's like Andy Reid got run out of town there, right? And they did win another Super Bowl, and they've been to 2 Super Bowls since then, and they both ended up winning in that scenario. And I'd also argue that this is why I wanted to use this comparison, and maybe Pete Carroll will fall into that if he takes a job and similar things happen. Then Andy Reid goes to the Chiefs, and he's been better for it. Part of that is because he's able to find his guy at quarterback.
Yeah.
Right, which is
not the easy. Well, he had a 10th overall pick.
Right? I think he was the 12th, but they also traded up for that pick.
Yeah.
They were still having success in his first couple years with Alex Smith.
Yeah, Alex Smith took him to the playoffs that year, and then they traded up, I think, to get Patty Mahomes. And then Patty sat his first year, and they were also a playoff team that year. But again, they were in this Steelers kind of state that they were good for 9 or 10 wins in a playoff. Patty Mahomes was obviously the catalyst that took him into winning multiple Super Bowls and being arguably the best team over the last 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
Not arguably they are the best team. So that would be my parallel. And I guess I'd say for Tomlin's sake too, it might be beneficial for both of them if he was going to move on, because maybe you get somewhere else, you're blaming the roster. Maybe you go somewhere with a better GM that you can work with that will find the talent, you know, and surround you with some better pieces. And you obviously are a good coach, which for those reasons, I do agree that it's like, if you fire Tomlin's like, who are you going to get that's better? But I don't know that you should be handcuffed, because I hear that said all the time. It's like, we talked about that, you know, the same thing with the Steelers last year and even with Pete Carroll firing him.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know that you should handcuff yourself, though, to that kind of logic, that it's like, well, if we fire him, who are we going to get that's better? I don't know. Really good coaches come around all the time. Just like quarterbacks, that it's like, you might miss on some people, but like, just because you don't know what it is doesn't mean that it's inherently worse.
Yeah.
You don't know who that person is, but there's always going to be something new that's coming up. So I don't know that you should, you know, limit yourself because it's just like, well, we can't find anyone better. How do you know?
Yeah, I think it could be beneficial for both parties. Like you're saying, I'm not going to piggyback off of you too much, but it could be more beneficial even for Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, that's what I was mostly getting at.
Yeah, it may hurt the Steelers, but it might actually be better for him long term.
Yeah.
You get a second breath of life. You guys have anything else you want to hit on from last week, or you want to jump right into the upcoming games?
I guess the since I didn't really expand on it, is that the Commanders-Bucks game.
Yeah.
I just thought the interesting point is that we obviously all had the Bucks, and at least my reasoning is that Jayden Daniels had a great season. I think it's tough for a rookie quarterback to go on the road and win a playoff game. I don't know. Jayden Daniels, I'm curious to see what he does in this game, but sure seems like he's arrived.
Yeah. He's risen to every occasion, it seems like. Right when you think, like, oh, he's a rookie, he's gonna bow out here, he finds a way.
Yeah. Although I'd also counter my own thing, because I was just kind of thinking about this. It's like we had said at the beginning of the season, like C.J. Stroud, everyone said that he arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out and they make the playoffs his rookie year, and they win a playoff game. To be fair, they also won a playoff game just this last week, and maybe they'll win another one. They play the Chiefs on the road. That's going to be tough. But if he does it, you can kind of salvage a season that otherwise was not very good, but seems like in the NFL, people are quick to take, and Tanner, I think, said this exactly, is like, you have one good year and they're ready to anoint you, and then you have a sophomore slump and they're ready to drag you.
Mm-hmm.
But then by year three or four, you actually figure out who a guy is. So I think it was pretty interesting to see Jayden Daniels really rise to the occasion, and it does seem like he's arrived. But curious to see what he does this weekend and next year and the year after that before I think you can really put a stamp on whether or not he's truly an elite quarterback in the league.
It's a big win for Washington and their fan base. That was their first playoff win since 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts.
They also were helped out by Baker fumbling that ball late in the game.
Yeah, that was bad. That was hard to watch.
Did you see Baker truck Bobby Wagner, though? That was cool.
I did not see that. Flamethrower.
He giveth and he taketh away.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like right now in this playoff race that you have two fan bases that are just like pretty deserving to see some kind of victory in their city, and that's the Detroit Lions and the Washington Commanders. So,
and the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
And the Bills, but I mean, they've been going to the AFC Championship, so there's been some excitement for them.
Yeah, they've been competitive now for a while.
Yeah, it's obviously another one of those stories that would be great to see it happen, especially after their, four Super Bowl losses in a row.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. It'd be kind of cool if you could find yourself seeing your team, either the Lions or the Commanders, somehow in a Super Bowl. Well, not somehow for the Lions, but for the Commanders especially. If they could somehow squeak through, it'd be kind of crazy. Yeah. When's the last time a rookie quarterback took their team to the Super Bowl?
Was it Ben Roethlisberger? Or was that his second year? I thought Ben won it against the Seahawks. I thought he was a rookie. Maybe it was his second year, though.
I feel like that was his second year, but I could be wrong.
We'll have to do some fact-checking.
Yeah, I'll look into that. Let's jump into the division weekend for the NFL. The first game we got on Saturday, we were looking at the Chiefs and Texans. What do you guys got there?
I'm going to go the Tanner Rutz route after my rough weekend last weekend, and I'm just going to pick winners instead of going with spreads. And I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs since I have them as my Super Bowl pick, so that's an easy one.
I don't have the spreads up anyway, so I'm just
I have them at 8.5.
8.5. I'm just going to go Chiefs on that one and not complicate it. Chiefs are winning that game, so I'll go Chiefs straight up.
You guys think that'll be a blowout game, or do you think it's going to be one of those close, like, one-score games?
This is why I'm not picking the spread.
Yeah.
Is that whatever I say, it's probably going to be the opposite. You know, I'd like to think that after the Texans won last week that they're going to come out and keep this game close, especially because the Chiefs, I think I saw this, that like the Chiefs are like the only team in NFL history that they haven't scored a game over 30 points all year, and like the only team that like has made the playoffs or like was a one seed. I don't know exactly what the qualifier was for the only team in NFL history, but I don't think they scored over 30 points in a single game this year. So by that logic, if they continue that, the most points they could score is 29, so the Texans only need to score 21 to cover the spread. Can they do it? I don't know. So it makes me think it'd be a close game and not a blowout because the Chiefs haven't blown out anyone, but maybe this will be the week that the Chiefs go hang 40. Yeah, so I don't know, but I got the Chiefs.
See, I want to be different. I feel like the whole world is going to be picking the Chiefs. I'm going to go Texans.
It's better if we all don't pick the same thing because we were 0 for 2 on unanimous picks last week. So yeah. I think that's a good call.
I'm going to go Texans. And the reason why, I know the last game that the Chiefs played, all they did was put in their backups and, you know, none of the starters were playing. But it was still a blowout loss. They've had some time to sit around and linger on that, which I'm sure they're not that upset by. I think there was probably a little bit of strategy in that, too, in order to knock the Bengals out. Maybe, maybe not. But I don't know. There's just something about this Texans team that I just have a gut feeling. Nothing more than that. Gut feeling, Texans.
We saw it in the college football playoff. Not that it's apples to apples, but all the teams that had a bye lost.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it kind of works that way. You come in, you have to play all the way down the stretch of the season to make the playoffs, and then you instantly get into a playoff game. You win. You play pretty well, especially for two quarters, you know, of the game, and then you just carry that momentum. So
yeah, and it's not like the Chiefs have played that particular – they've been winning. I mean, they've had a great record, but it's like it's not like they've had just blowout wins. It's not like it's the same Chiefs that we've been seeing for year after year. So I feel like there's a little bit of bleeding there. So the right team can strike and maybe take them down, but we'll see what happens. Next game we got is Lions versus the Commanders.
Lions, Commanders. I think I'm going to not overthink this one again, and I'm going to go Lions in this one.
Yeah, I got the Lions in the Super Bowl, so that's an easy pick for me. I don't need to go over what I said before, is that Jane Daniels looks like he's a dude. I could see them giving them problems, specifically Jane Daniels, but I don't know that it's going to be enough to stop the Lions.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's a close game. I got a 9.5 point spread, which would tell you that it's not going to be a close game. But, you know, anything can happen, especially if somebody gets hurt. Lions have been pretty good about getting their players hurt this year, unfortunately for them.
True.
So
that is true.
You're one Jared Goff injury away or Jahmyr Gibbs away from not being the same team. So you never know. Not that I'm not that I want to see that happen.
That
but.
Offense, I think, is just too powerful.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be a high-scoring game, but it's at the end it's going to be Lions. I could see it being close through most of it, and then Lions go punch in a touchdown with 2.5 minutes left.
On some kind of trick play.
They go up 10 with 2.5 minutes left and cover the spread, something like that.
Any chance Aaron Glenn's been spending too much time preparing for head coaching interviews and not watching tape of Jaden Daniels?
Either way, I don't think it matters because that defense has been leaky all season. And Aaron Glenn's been, you know, he's been fantastic with the hand he's been dealt, because I think every single player on that defense has been hurt at one point and missed games. So the fact that they've gotten this far is a testament to his coaching ability to keep things close enough. But I just think that offense has too much firepower.
Yeah, I'm going Lions. Nothing else to add. Going into Sunday's games, we got the Eagles and Rams.
Oh boy.
Ooh, Nelly. Well, this one's easier for me. Although here's what I'll say. I'm going to take the Eagles.
Yeah, you have them.
Cuz I have them as my Super Bowl pick. So, I'll take the Eagles, but what I will say is that this Rams team is sneaky, and I think this is going to be a close game. Not so sneaky anymore, I guess. They've been playing really well down the stretch. Their D-line, crazy. How Sean McVay and we're talking about GMs finding diamonds in the rough. It's like every single year they manage to find some no name D edge guy that's like the next big thing. Every single year it seems like they find a guy, and then you lost Aaron Donald, and then you bring in Fisk, who was second round pick, and he's looking like a superstar. So this defense is talented. Matt Stafford can sling the rock around. Like I don't want to count the Rams out, but I'm going to go Eagles just because I think they edge it out just by a hair.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I think I also have to go with the Eagles. I'm mostly going to give them the bump because they're at home.
Go Birds.
I thought I saw that they're expecting snow in that game. I think forecast calls for snow right around kickoff, which I think should help the Eagles, you know, you'd think.
Make it a sloppy game.
make it a sloppy game. Yeah, this Rams team is a dangerous one, so it's tough to pick against them right now, but I'm vaguely remembering that they played, was that Sunday Night Football a handful of weeks back, and Saquon went for like 300 yards in that game and absolutely torched them. And you're right that they do have a good young defense and they found guys. I don't know what the availability was of everyone on that defense that night. I believe we were watching it at lovely Red Robin in preparation to go see Wicked. All I remember is seeing Saquon just running gash run after gash run, and the game was basically over before the opening credits even started.
Yeah, and I was playing you in fantasy that week. That was a fun week.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I had Barkley.
So, yeah, so I'm going to assume that more of the same is going to happen. I got the Eagles, go Birds.
Yeah, Rams were my pick at the beginning of this season. I'm sticking with them, so I got the Rams over the Eagles on this one. I just think that Sean McVay, you just can never count the guy out. He's always going to find a way. Matt Stafford, wily old vet. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, just to piggyback everything you guys are saying, everything that Nigel said for his argument for the Eagles, he really talked a big game up for the Rams. So everything that Nigel said, just relay that to my message. Go Rams.
Yeah.
Last one is Ravens versus Bills.
This
is going to be the best game of the weekend.
And the point spread would say it, because Baltimore is a one-point favorite on the road, which should tell you that that means that at least Vegas likes Baltimore a lot in this game. It's tough to be a road favorite, especially in the second round of the playoffs. I am going to pick the Bills, and I don't really love that pick, but and I don't really have a lot of evidence. I mean, I was just citing earlier season matchups for like a lot of these other games, or at least the last one or whatever. But and the Bills, I think, lost like 30-something to 7 last time they played the Ravens, and Derrick Henry went off for 200 yards, including like a 80-yard touchdown. I wouldn't be shocked to see more of the same, but I don't know. I had Josh Allen on my fantasy team. I like the Bills. I like the Ravens too, but I think they show up and they got the home field advantage. I think the crowd is going to push them over, and they pull it out late. Josh Allen, whether he wins MVP or not, I think he's going to win that day.
Yeah, I think winner of this game, quarterback of this game, wins the MVP.
Isn't MVP voting already in? Because I don't think you take into playoffs.
Do you not take playoffs into?
No, I think you send in your MVP. They haven't announced it, obviously, but you don't, or you send in your MVP voting like between the last game of the regular season and the first game of the playoffs.
I'll stick to what I said, even if the votes are already in. this one's tough. I'm gonna go Ravens. I think that since this Ravens defense is gonna be tough for Josh Allen. I think I heard that since they moved Kyle Hamilton back to their deep safety instead of their kind of up safety, they've been the best defense in the league. It's been like 7 weeks now or something like that. So since they've made that move, they've been the best defense. So I'm going to say that continues. They make this game gritty. Josh Allen doesn't have passing lanes. They hand the ball off a ton, and Lamar runs it a ton, and they just gut it out, get a 1-point victory. It's going to be a push on the spread.
Yeah, I mean,
late field goal by Tucker to win it.
He's been shaky.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a shaky one there. Could also be the ending of the game where he doinks it.
Mm. Whoa,
doink to lose.
Yeah,
I got win by one.
I guess that to throw that in while it's top of mind. That's why the Bucks Commanders game, doink to go in to win the game at the end.
Yeah.
I told you when that Zane Gonzalez was watching out, I saw everyone posted it on Twitter and stuff, is that the guy's like playing with his hair. It was like a tick. He's like playing with his hair, goes and puts his helmet on, takes it off, goes and plays with his hair, goes and put his helmet, like did it like 5 times. I was like,
he took his shoe off too. I saw that.
Yeah, I was like this guy is nervous. He's missing this kick. And then it goes up and it hits the post. And I was like, I fucking called that shit. And then it goes in. I was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Just how he drew it up.
Yep.
Yeah, I got Ravens. Simple. I mean, that's been my pick. They're going to the Super Bowl. Their defense was lights out last year. It's lights out this year. They're missing piece. They needed Derrick Henry. King Henry is here, so All hail the king. Ravens are going to the Super Bowl.
Love it.
Yep.
All right. With that, we are done with the NFL. We'll see who's right or wrong. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk to Uncle Danny. Longtime listener, first-time caller. We'll be right back.
Hey, good evening there, Irish fans. Whether you be one of you or a thousand of you, there's definitely a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow come Monday night. I believe Irish will succeed. The way I see this game playing out is Ohio State may be the more talented team, but I believe Notre Dame has the mental edge. It seems like the first game of the season, when Notre Dame played Texas A&M, it seemed like that was 3 years ago, and then they lost to Northern Illinois, which I caught a lot of grief from a lot of the people, but it seems like it's been a grind for the last 15 weeks, week after week, injury after injury. But the way I see this game playing out, and again, like I said, Ohio State is probably the more talented team, but when Notre Dame is on offense, because I don't believe there's any weaknesses on the Ohio State side of the ball, we keep hearing how much NFL talent there is, and I believe that. They're fast, they're big, they're solid. But I think Notre Dame has to play their game. They got to be able to shorten the game to, you know, to their expectations and use a play clock. You know, Riley needs to stay two-dimensional on his, you know, his design runs and to be able to, you know, throw the football. Plus, they've got to be smart with the football. Being able to win the turnover margin is huge in this game. And the offensive line, we all know, has been banged up the last couple of days. The last couple of weeks. But I wouldn't ask of too much from the offensive line, just to stay within their means and let the defense and special teams take over. Now, Ohio State, on their offensive side of the ball, with the amount of talent they have, you know, their wide receivers are fast, they're quick. We've got to be able to put pressure on Howard and stay between the hash marks, keep the game within our means. I think this will be a long grind, just like every week has been for the Irish. You know, they play with a lot of team glory. There's no certain one person. I believe that Notre Dame has the mindset that will keep them succeeding this game as it has every week. So with that said, go Irish.
That was great.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Uncle Danny. Anything to add to it?
No, I think I had the Irish winning it, you know, when we did our last episode. I think he checked a lot of the boxes there. Is that, yeah, you're right. And I kind of said that before, too, that Ohio State, they're more talented. I think they've been a little more up and down. I think the one thing that does make me nervous is that, yeah, they were kind of down last week against Texas, right? They had a huge game against Tennessee, huge game against Oregon. Honestly, a bit of a letdown against Texas. They still won. Scoreline looked like it wasn't a letdown because they got that late strip sack return for a touchdown.
But it wasn't the high-powered offense you'd seen in the previous
games.
No,
and that Jeremiah Smith, I think, had one catch in the game where he had been going for, you know, 50, 60-yard touchdowns in every game, you know, to kind of in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think Danny hit it on the head. I think the Irish, they just got to stay within themselves. They got to run the ball and kill the clock. Don't give Ohio State a chance to have splashy plays. Turn it into a grinded out game, try to just win 24-17, something like that. So I love the voicemail, Danny. Yeah. And he's right, they do have the right mindset. Okay, they got Marcus Freeman in there, great coach, great mindset, they play as a unit. I'm excited.
Just gotta muddy those waters.
Yep,
it's all between the ears.
Yeah, well, I couldn't disagree more. Ohio State is going to boat race. This game's going to be 45-10 final score.
God, I hope not.
What I will say, I mean, we kind of talked about it last week, but it's like the, generally speaking, the worst possible scenario for my college football fandom. Two teams that I've disliked for most of my years of being a college football fan. However, Notre Dame is, you know, kind of won my heart over a little bit. I like Marcus Freeman. I think he's a good dude, and so I definitely like what the direction the Irish are going. But I'm sticking with my national champion pick with Ohio State. I think there's just too much firepower, and if they can get ahead at all and force Notre Dame's hand, this game will be over, and it'll be a boat race. Now, doing that is going to be a whole other story because their defense is nasty work, and so that's going to be it's going to be tough for them to be scoring a bunch of points, but they got a lot. I mean, their running backs are talented. Their wide receivers are talented. It's all over the field with that team. Their quarterback can run and is talented and dual threat. So, and their defense is good too. So I just think I got to take Ohio State in this one.
But I want to agree with Nigel. I really do. But I'm going with Uncle Danny on this. He really won me over on this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know what? That's football at the end of the day, man. Smash mouth football. Bring the fullback back. Bring it back for this game. Just, like he said, keep between the hash marks. Just pound the rock. Play solid defense. Have that mindset coming into it. Let's go fight an Irish, man.
Team glory.
Right? We're going to find that gold at the end of the rainbow there.
Yeah, I think to double down on something Uncle Danny said, too, is that you know, it's the mindset and it's, you know, between the ears is that I think that's a really good point too, because you kind of see, you saw, like I was saying in the Texas game too, is that what was the worst play in that game? It was when Ohio State threw a screen pass right before halftime and Texas let them go 75, 80 yards on a screen pass. Like they might be going in, they're kicking a field goal to probably take the lead. Things don't always happen the same way. Like, I've always been a big proponent. It's like, well, if they don't score there, then it's a tie game, and then Quinn Ewers doesn't get strip sacked. That's not how football works. But, you know, theoretically, though, they scored 21 points. Or I guess they got 28 with the strip sack, but they scored 21 points. And seven of those came on them losing focus, Texas being them, losing focus right before halftime. I don't think Notre Dame's going to have that issue. I think they're much more dialed in. They're not going to have these mental lapses. Maybe you're right, and the firepower that Ohio State has is too much for them, and there's no need for a mental lapse because it's just we're better at this than you are. That could very well be the case. It could play out that way, but I don't think they're going to beat themselves. You saw how Michigan handled the game against them, and they won. They did basically what Danny is saying. Run the ball, whether it's Leonard or the running back. I think Jeremiah Love, their running back, being hurt, is going to hurt them pretty bad if he's really feeling roughed up. He played in the last game. He had a big knee brace on. Didn't stop him from hurdling somebody.
And that was sick.
That was crazy because the guy was basically standing straight up and he just jumped over the top of him. It wasn't like the guy went low and he hurdled over him. The guy was basically standing straight up, squared up, and he just leaped right over the top of him.
Didn't even like dive at his legs at all.
No.
He just kind of just decided, I'm going to jump right over this guy.
Yeah, so his knee must be feeling okay. But you know, run the ball. Just do what Michigan did. Control the clock. Run it. Grind it out. Don't make mental mistakes. Keep it close.
Keep the chains moving.
And seize an opportunity, whether it's defense or special teams or a big offensive play. You saw Notre Dame do that against Penn State, too, that they're kind of down and out. And then the DB slips. Tommy Turf tackles him. He falls down. The wide receiver is running wide open, 50-yard touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can't miss those opportunities. So, I could see it playing out that way.
Yeah. Luke and I were talking about this during the games last week, but it's interesting that there's no good quarterbacks in any of these games. Like, they're good for what they are, you know, dual threat type of guys, but it's just kind of interesting to see the style of the teams that have kind of made it. And even though Ohio State is high powered, that's not necessarily the quarterback that's high powered. It's the rest of the guys that are super talented. You just get it in their hands and they break off huge plays. So it's going to be, I don't doubt for a second that one, or at least Notre Dame's going to try to make it a game played in the phone booth and, you know, 22 guys in a cloud of dust or whatever.
Three yards
in a cloud of dust, whatever.
Or 22 guys.
Yeah. 22 guys, 3 yards, cloud of dust. But You know, the old saying, what they all, what the kids always say. But and the other good point he made was turnover battle. That's going to be a huge one, is who can keep their hands on the ball, because that was big swings in both those games.
It was
all about the turnovers.
You remember when I called it?
Yeah, their best offense was putting the defense back on the field in that semifinal.
Yep, Tanner wasn't here to witness that, but I really called my shot in that Penn State-Notre Dame game. Notre Dame had to punt it late where they couldn't move it another 10 yards to get in field goal range. And I was like, this might be Notre Dame's best offense right here. Punt the ball and let Drew Aller throw a pick, even though he had only thrown like three.
Oh, you told me that, yeah.
Yeah, I told you weren't here,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, but I remember you talking about
that. I did tell you, yeah, and I was like, and yeah, Drew Aller only threw like three or four picks this year. It was a big, you know, highlight of his season, is that he had reduced the turnovers. But I never trusted the guy. Yeah. I just don't think he's that good at throwing the ball.
And he should have thrown another pick in that game. They called it.
Yeah, they called it a
PI on it, which was a horrible call.
Yeah.
But and then they end up getting a touchdown like a play later. But
yeah.
Aller's been, he just hits the tight end. The tight end's a better quarterback on that Penn State team than Drew Aller is.
Yeah.
So. He just throws it to him, checks it down to the running backs, and again, same thing goes with that Penn State team, is that all the players around him are studs and can bust off big plays.
That's going to be the big difference. We've basically already said this in many ways, but I want to point this out, is that I think in that Penn State-Notre Dame game, Penn State did not complete a single ball to a wide receiver. The only people who caught it was the tight end and the running back. Mostly on screen passes, as you would imagine. I think the tight end, as it Warren, got a few downfield throws, but for the most part, it was all screens or checkdowns and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Ohio State is going to go 0-for throwing to their wide receivers in this game.
No.
So Notre Dame's going to have a better game plan to limit those big plays, and that's what Texas did.
Mm-hmm.
You can let them catch the ball. You can't let them run after the catch, and I think Notre Dame has the guys that can do it. It just depends on whether or not it's their day.
Yeah.
It's a simple man's take, but I think that we've seen it countless times that sometimes the high power teams are the ones that fall the hardest. And I think that there's a great opportunity for Notre Dame to make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Danny kind of said that too, is that I think they're, maybe it's because I picked Notre Dame and it's the optimist in me, is that I think you're right, is that sometimes when you have these high powered teams and the Lions, maybe we'll see if they run into this. When things don't work, you really start to question yourself and you're scrambling for answers because you're not, much like Michigan did to Ohio State, you're not used to being in this position.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame's been grinding it out all year. They find themselves down or in a dogfight where things aren't going their way and nothing's really working. Well, that's just kind of how they've played a lot of the season. So they know how to play in that type of environment, and it could be, he said, you just have to keep it close. You can't get down two or three scores early because Notre Dame is not equipped to come back in a game where they're down 17 points.
Yeah, if that game looks like the Oregon game, they're in big trouble. Yeah. If they just go crazy in the first quarter.
They keep it low scoring in a grinded out game. They know how to win that game. I don't think Ohio State has proven over the years, but especially this year, that that's a game they're comfortable playing. One score game. Not a lot of movement on offense, a lot of defense, a lot of three-yard runs.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I feel like, to go against myself here, but it kind of Chip Kelly, historically, their offensive coordinator, it's like he wants big plays all at once. He wants to score. He's never been good in games that are like kind of grinded out like that. And so I think that's Ohio State's, you know, that's what they got to do if they want to win that game is get ahead early and fend them off, because if it's you know, a grinded out game, I don't like their chances in that. And I know that's what Notre Dame's going to try to make it.
2017, that's my score prediction, Notre Dame.
Ooh. I'll go 35-17, Ohio State.
17-13, Notre Dame.
Love it.
All right, with that, we're going into our last little segment. And no, it is not kick it or punt it. Sorry to disappoint everyone. We're not doing kick it or punt it this week. But we are bringing back the bologna sandwich winner of the week. So, with that said, Luke, who gets your bologna sandwich this week?
Okay, so I'm going to go with a little bit of an oddball pick, and shout out Shane Moore for kind of introing it. I'm going to go LiAngelo Ball. Was that going to be your pick?
No.
Okay. I thought you were making a movement like you were pissed that that was my pick. I'm going to go LiAngelo Ball, and I'll tell you why. Is that I think if you look back in time, you know, if LeVar Ball had a depth chart of his sons, I don't even think LiAngelo was in the three deeps. He was off the team. He got arrested in China for shoplifting. But look at him now. He's got one of the best bangers of 2025, reminiscent of our middle school, high school days.
15 days in,
he's got one of the best bangers. And so it's a real Phoenix rising from the ashes type of moment for the Ball family, especially because, like, right now, LaMelo, I think, has been playing pretty well, but I think he's been in and out of the lineup.
I think he's averaging 29 points a game.
Yeah, he's playing well. I thought I saw he's been missing some time, though, with some injuries. And Lonzo Ball, for the better part of the last few years, he just keeps getting hurt. He's okay. He's pretty good when he's in. But I don't know. Maybe LiAngelo Ball, he might – not only is he on the depth chart, he might be moving up the depth chart, especially over Lonzo. So shout out LiAngelo Ball and Tweaker. I think that's the song. I don't know. I love it, though. And Shane gave us a little taste of it earlier. I dropped it in the episode last week as one of our songs. So I told Shane, as our resident field reporter or whatever, self-appointed field reporter, that he has my permission to DM LiAngelo and see if we can get rights to use the song, maybe incorporate it into our intro. But haven't heard back from him. Forgot to ask him that when he was on earlier.
I'm sure he's still working on it.
Yeah, these things take time.
Efforting.
The reason why I was punching air is I thought you were getting a lead up here, because it was funny on this. On mine, it was a post from ESPN, and the first comment on there was, LeVar Ball is punching air right now. He didn't think of this idea. And the idea was that Amon-Ra St. Brown's dad, have you guys heard this?
Yeah, that, John St. Brown.
Yeah, John St. Brown is actually John Brown. There's no Saint in his last name. He added the Saint to his son's last name. And he told his wife that, or his wife said that he was crazy, but he said, no, listen, trust me, it's good. It's going to look better on the back of a jersey. So he was already predicting his sons to go to the NFL. Well, right at birth, he was already predicting this.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a cool little story for a lunch pail bologna sandwich winner of the week.
I didn't really have one, but I'm just going to throw one out there. I'm going to go with Jack Sawyer,
nice.
Middle linebacker for Ohio State, since I'm on the Ohio State bandwagon suddenly in my life. He was the one that rushed Quinn Ewers on the final play and took it picks or strip six. And I'm just doing it because I thought it was a sick ending to the game. It made it exciting. And he's also the guy that tried to single-handedly fight every single player on Michigan when they play into the flag, which I thought was stupid when it happened. But now I'm Team Jack Sawyer, and he's a boss hog. Dude looks like a linebacker. He kind of has the neck roll sort of vibe. Captain, 5 years, most starts on Ohio State in history on the defensive end, I'm pretty sure. So that's my bologna sandwich player of the week.
Just
making plays. Just sending his team to the championship.
Yeah, if you were listening on the broadcast too, there's kind of some nice symmetry there, is that him and Quinn Ewers were roommates because Quinn Ewers originally went to Ohio State his freshman year. So they were roommates their freshman year and came in together. And then you get kind of this
full circle moment.
Full circle is that then he strip sacks his old roommate and takes it house to end his season and keep his going. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
As a honorable mention, did you guys see the Mariners made a little splash today?
We're not talking Mariners. I didn't have that in my notes.
They just signed the number 6 international prospect, nicknamed the Beast.
Ooh, I did see that. That's my secondary bologna sandwich player.
When is he projected to make the majors?
Jerry DePoto, for all the major moves that he's made this offseason.
I'm not sure. I just saw the headline. That's it.
Coming to Seattle in 2030. We basically already said it. I was going to say, for my serious one, would be Marcus Freeman. would be my lunch pail guy of the week.
I was going to go Marcus Freeman too, so yeah. But I went Jack Sawyer. For making me any bit of a believer in Notre Dame, it takes a lot, because I've been a longtime Notre Dame hater. Also, Uncle Danny can be a lunch pail guy of the week too for calling in. And we were pretty hard on him in jest when they lost to NIU. We immediately called him after the Husky game and flipped him shit, all three of us on the phone. So he said, I'm going to take this one on the chin, and he did. And now his team's in the national championship. So thanks for being a listener and loyal fan of the show and being a good sport with us.
And let's end with that. That's heartfelt. I love it. So Luke told me I can no longer use Hayes in the Barn for my ending little thing there. So I'm going to steal one from Nigel now. So my little thing for today is going to be 22 guys and a cloud of dust. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Hey, good evening there, Irish fans. Whether you be one of you or a thousand of you, there's definitely a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow come Monday night. I believe Irish will succeed.